Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, November the 4th, day number 308 of 2014. Today we're going to chat with our good friend Orestes Matachena, and we're going to look at his life. He celebrates a very important anniversary this year, and that is 50 years in the United States, 50 years from leaving Cuba. And that is such an amazing anniversary when you think about it, and we're going to talk about what he went through to leave Cuba and some of his story. And, of course, many of us who are Cuban remember. In fact, Orestes and I have a similarity. We both went through Mexico, and we both came to the United States 50 years ago. Our family came here in September of 1964, Orestes a little bit later, but also from Mexico. So we share that story, and it's one that we would like to hear today from our good friend Orestes Matachena. Just a quick note about our sponsor today, Audible.com. They're the source for audiobooks, and if you are interested in an audiobook, a lot of people don't like audiobooks, a lot of people do. I love audiobooks. I think they're an absolutely wonderful invention, as they like to say, and I definitely would recommend that you click on the link on the show information and you go to this amazing website and see for yourself all of the audiobooks. They have a tremendous inventory, as you will see. Check it out, and if you get yourself an audiobook, you're going to make my day. I'll say it again. If you get yourself an audiobook, you're going to make my day. Let me say hello to our good friend Orestes. How are you, Orestes? Orestes, how are you? I think we just lost our friend Orestes, and I think I know what's happening. We've had a problem with our – we're getting a lot of rain today, unfortunately, and we have a problem with the Internet, and I think we've lost our friend Orestes. But anyway, we're going to be talking about his story coming to the United States, and I think he may be able to listen to me. So, Orestes, if you are on the air with me right now, just hang in there while we reconnect for some crazy reason. We lost our connection. These things happen, by the way, when we get a lot of rain in the area. We're getting a huge storm right now, so I apologize that we're going through that. I certainly apologize to my friend Orestes for the inconvenience. Just a couple of quick notes here as we look at On This Day in History, going back to a couple of things that happened on this day. And I bring this one up because it has a connection to Cuba, and let me explain this one. It was on this day in 1956 that the Soviets put down the invasion of the Hungarian Revolution. Back in 1956, there was an uprising in Hungary against the communist regime, and it was the first of these uprisings. Czechoslovakia came later in 68, but this was the first one, and the Soviets were brutal in putting it down, eventually killing many people. They sent in the tanks and just crushed the rebellion. But there's a Cuban connection to it that I always enjoy hearing from my parents. As some of you know, my dad was a banker in Cuba. He had a position in as a branch manager in a bank in Havana. And one day he says to me that shortly after the Hungarian invasion, these people from Hungary showed up. They had moved to Cuba, not exactly sure what their connection to Cuba was, but they had, you know, moved to Cuba, as many Hungarians did, and they moved to other parts of the world. And they show up at the branch to open an account because they wanted to start a small business. So here they are, they're talking to my father and some of his other friends and at the bank, and they're telling them the story of the communist takeover, and these Cubans, you know, like my dad and some of the others, are sitting around going, "Wow, you mean a communist revolution? My goodness, that'll never happen here. I mean, my goodness, how horrible that is." that you have to go through that. Well, as we know, as we know now, in retrospect, it did happen in Cuba. And my dad always enjoys telling me that story, or telling us that story, because it really shows you. It really shows you the how things can change. How sometimes, you know, things can be in a particular way, and then they change. Anyway, we're trying to connect to our friend Orestes Matacena. We are right now, Orestes Matacena, forgive me. We are right now trying to do that. I believe he's holding as we try to reconnect with him. So, Orestes, if you can hear me, just bear with me for a second. Today is also another interesting anniversary. On this day in 2008, President Obama was elected president. And I find it interesting that here we are celebrating the sixth anniversary of his initial election, the first election, on another election day, though I have a feeling, without getting too political today, I have a feeling that things are going to look a little bit different tonight than they did in 2008, because the truth of the matter is that this is not a very good situation right now for President Obama. Not going to be a good night for him and the Democrats tonight. Well, we're trying to connect with our friend Orestes Matacena, and we're trying to do that. Once again, we're going to be looking back at his life as we look at 50 years of his life here in the United States, and we're going to be doing that with him as soon as we can make the connection. We have lost our internet connection. That's our problem, and therefore, we have lost him, or the connection to him. It's possible that we can get him back in a second. It could be 30 seconds. It could be another few minutes. But right now, our internet connection, unfortunately, has disappeared for the moment. That happens sometimes when we have bad rain in the area, and unfortunately, we do. We do at the moment. One of the things that I was saying before we were able to reconnect is I talked to you a little bit here as we try to reconnect with our friend Orestes, is that one of the things that I find fascinating when I talk to Cubans, and when we talk about the fact that many of us have now been out of Cuba for, let's say, 50 years now, as in the case of my family, as is the case of Orestes, you know, we have now been out of the country for a very long time. You know, 50 years is an entire lifetime for a lot of people. I mean, there was a time in the history of the world where 50 years was a life expectancy. 50 years is half a century. So when you think of it on those terms, you know, 50 years is a very, very long time. And for people like Orestes and I, coming to the United States and growing up in the United States is such an amazing thing. And looking back at it now, when you think of, you know, one of the things I'll be asking Orestes today is, what was he thinking? You know, what was he thinking, I don't know, 51, 52 years ago when he was a young man in Cuba and he was living there and he was watching, obviously, the changes going on in Cuba? Did he ever think that he would be out of Cuba for 50 years? I mean, that is a question. I know my parents, for example, never thought that they would have to leave Cuba. They just never thought that would be something they would have to do. And yet, you know, yet they did, which is something that is so remarkable. Well, one of the things that we'll be hearing from Orestes today, I think I've got him back on the phone right now. Orestes, are you with me now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, look, I apologize. We had a little technical problem there, so you got to hear me for about 5 or 6 minutes. I had to ad-lib there. You know that, being your profession, so I apologize for that. How did I do?
You did fantastic.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was on the brink of freaking out from but I thank you so much for that. Well, let's go right at the beginning. As I mentioned, we are celebrating your life today, your 50 years in the United States. It's a great honor for me to share that with you. So why don't we kind of go back to that time, let's say 1960, 1961, changes are happening in Cuba. What were you doing? And just talk a little bit about that.
Well, when the revolution won you know, and they removed the Batista, the dictator that we had before. You know, 90% of the people, they were very happy, including me, that happened, because I don't like dictators. I don't care if they are right, left, up and down, whatever. You know, dictators are terrible. So, for the first 3 months, you know, well, the first, on I think it was January the 5th, January 1959, the 6th, I think it was, or 6th or the 8th, I think it was the 6th, Fidel Castro gave a huge speech to, you know, to Cuba, to you know, and we listened, you know, my dad and I, we listened. And my dad, after the speech, said to me, Orestes, this guy, he's a communist, and he's going to destroy the nation. And I said, oh, Dad, you know, you don't know, this is the revolution of the young people, you're an old guy, you know, and I started. He said, listen, I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I think is going to happen. And he was coming from the perspective of an Italian, right? And, you know, he was not Cuban, so, you know, he saw Cuba from another angle, all these things, and he understood what that meant. For instance, in the 30s, he went to see his family in Italy, and he was traveling with his best friend from Rome to Naples or something. I don't know exactly, but you know, they were in a train going somewhere, and suddenly the train was stopped. And at that time, as you know, everybody wore suits and everything, so you know, everybody was dressed up, that you know, with their suits and stuff. The train was stopped by a gang of communists, and they when that happened, you know, everybody started, you know, running, and you know, and my dad, the first thing he did was to take his jacket off and his tie. And he started running, you know, and then he joined the communists, right? But his friend and him, they both lost, you know, in the revolt there, you know, running around trying to get, they separated each other. And as my father now is running, you know, suddenly he looks up and sees the head of his best friend in a stick. On a stick, on a pole, you know.
Oh, wow.
Like a, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were running, you know, one of the guys, they cut his head off. They beat the head at him. So, anyway, so that, you know, he understood what meant to be communism, and he knew the entire, not because just that, because that,
right.
You know, they didn't have to be a communist. But anyway,
let me ask you a question about that, because I'm curious. This is a fascinating point you're raising. Now, your father had seen, I assume, Mussolini. Is that right? So that's what I mean. So he had seen the power of speeches and crowds, you know, caught up in the euphoria. And
absolutely.
He knew that it didn't end well. I mean, he knew the Italian story, that it didn't end well. And I think maybe that was the perspective he had, that he said, I've seen this. Yeah, I've seen this movie before, you know, and I think that's a fascinating point. I was not familiar with that part of your story. I knew you had Italian background, but I didn't realize that it was that way.
Right.
But that is fascinating. So your father was watching this, and he was, you know, there were pictures in his mind of another demagogue at another time. That's fascinating.
Right. Correct. And you know, from the 6 days, you know, since the first. Until the 6th or the 8th, I forgot now, 6th or 8th, you know, he didn't say one word about, I was the one who was euphoric and, you know, and going and doing, you know, and he wouldn't say one word, good or bad, you know, until he heard him speak. After he spoke, he said that, and of course I went in a, you know, oh no, yo, Dad, you're an old man, you don't know what you're talking about, this is the revolution of the people, the young people. Well, look what happened. But anyway, 3 months later, I was exactly thinking like my dad, and I realized and started seeing everything that was happening. Okay, when Fidel Castro said that day, arms, what you need arms for?
Right.
You know, that speech, you know, and that speech, so of course, he said, give us all the arms to the people, you know, the Cubans, they had the right to have arms, like here in the United States. So what they start doing, the Cubans start bringing their arms because, you know, now they were saved by you know, and there was not going to be any more robbers, anybody, no more crooks, no more you know, we were in heaven. So everybody gave their arms. And the ones who didn't, then they start going and combing the cities and taking the arms from people. Okay, anyway. So finally, they disarmed the people and. It was, but anyway, at that time, I went on the underground and stopped fighting against Castro because I thought that was terrible. Well, of course, the great majority were with him, and but we start, you know, fighting, and I spent 5 years fighting. You know, on the ground. But as you know, in 1964 was already 4 years that Cuba was how would I say? In other words, you could not have a visa, an American visa, for 6 years. Okay, so
right.
In 1964. I had 1 year left to have an American visa, all right? Because you know, the Americans they broke relations with Cuba in 1960. So anyway, so I was really really involved in the whole thing, and I said I better go because if they catch me, they're going to, you know, they're going to put me in front of a firing squad, and that will be the end of me.
Well, so, they would have done that too. They would have done that because they did it to other people.
Many of my friends were shot. You know,
that's
were
right.
Put in front of fire squads, and you know I was. Anyway, I finally the movement that I belonged, they thought that I had done enough and that my life was going to be really. I mean, they could catch me, and so they. They falsified the American visa.
Right.
And, the American visa, with the American visa, you could not come direct to the United States. You have to go to a third country. So,
right.
Mexico, Spain, you could go to Spain, but there was like a year or two to be able to leave. By Spain, by Mexico, because you needed to have the American passport. I mean, the American or a third, you know, a third country. You had to have. It was easier. It took like 3 months for you to be able to leave through Mexico. So I decided to go through Mexico, and then the Mexicans, when I asked for the passport, I showed my American visa, which was false. They didn't know, of course, you know, but you know, they thought there was everything was that. They gave me the visa, and 3 months later, I was, you know, I was able to leave. But 4 days later, 4 days before I leave, I get home. I got home like at 3 o'clock in the morning, and my dad is up, and his face was like. Like really, something had happened, very, very, very serious. And I said, "What happened?" Yeah, I mean, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, up, he was always sleeping at that time.
Right.
he said, Orestes, the police just came here. And he said, they are looking for you. And I said, what?
Mm.
And I said, right then and there, I left and I went to a friend of mine. And for the next 4 days, I slept every day in a different friend's house. And each day, at the next day, the police would be going to the friend of mine. In other words, let's say I went to your house and I slept at night in your house, right? And next day, you know, tomorrow I leave. Well, tomorrow morning after I left, the police would come to you and say, Silvio, where are your arrests? Was he a member
right.
of you? You know, and for 4 days like that until the last day. I went to a bar with two more friends of mine, a Bulgarian friend of mine, and a Cuban friend.
Did you say Hungarian? Did you say Hungarian?
No.
Bulgarian.
Yeah,
Bulgarian,
his father was in Cuba. He was in Cuba because his father was like a technician or something, and the communists they sent him there. But he was not a communist. He hated communism, and he will always say to me, each time I would talk about anything, he will always say, Orestes, don't speak. The walls have ears. I never forget that. And walls have ears. But anyway. And they didn't know. None of my friends knew that I was in the movement, you know, in the underground, you know, and the resistance. None of them. These were my best friends, and they had no idea that I was in the. The only one who knew was my dad. That I told him during when Bear Pigs came. That I said to him April 15, 1961. I said to him. Dad, I am in the resistance, and you know he looked at me. It was like 3-4 seconds that he stayed without saying a word for 3 seconds, looking at me, and he said, "Orestes, this is your country. You have to do what you got to do."
Right.
And I say, I bless you, and that was it. And, you know, he I'm sure that inside him was, imagine. But anyway, at that time, I start, you know, fighting. When I was the last day, I went to, the last night before, you know, I was going to leave Cuba. My two friends and me, we went to a bar, like a nightclub. They call them cabaret in Cuba, called Las Vegas. And we had a few drinks there. You know, we took a picture, which I have with me here, the two of us sitting there. And I remember that there were Russians at the cabaret there, and they were drinking. They were next to us, you know, having. But they would bring their own drinks also.
Hmm.
And they, you know, what the Russians drank there in Cuba? They drank rubbing alcohol.
Hmm.
It was beyond me. See, here in the States, you cannot drink rubbing alcohol because they put some chemicals or something that, you know, you'll be poisoned. So people don't do that. But in Cuba, they didn't put that chemical there, that poison, so people won't do it. So the Russians, that's what they drank. Beyond me. I mean, pure alcohol. But anyway.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, that night, from the cabaret, from the nightclub, we left and we went to the Bulgarian friend of mine house. Okay. So we take a bus, the number 32. I'll never forget. And we are on our way, and I fall asleep. Okay, in the bus, and the stop comes. They get out of the bus and they didn't wake me up. So I keep on going, and then suddenly the conductor, you know, the guy who, you know, in Cuba there was the driver plus
right.
the guy who
yeah, took the money. Pay,
you know,
the one who took the money,
took the
yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Right, I remember that.
In
yeah.
the following stop, he woke me up. Probably they say, I mean, I don't know, but what I believe is that my friends told him, listen, next stop, you know, wake him up. If you know, and then let them
right.
that we do it. So anyway, I get suddenly I wake up. That's the jokes. Imagine I am leaving from I'm going to go to the airport, and what do my friends do? Leave me sleeping in the just as a little joke. Anyway, he woke me up, and they say, oh, your friends they got off you know in the last stop. So I had to walk, you know, like twice as long in order to get to. So anyway, my father was there waiting for me, and from there, the four of us went to the airport. You know, my two friends and my dad. Well, of course, me, and so we got there, and I had bought. They at that time you could leave only with three. Yes, a pair of clothing, three of everything, you know, except shoes. One pair of shoes you could not bring. The only pair of shoes that you could take were the ones you were having. Three underwear, including the one you had on. In other words, the suitcase only could have two shirts, two underwear, and one pair of pants, I think it was one pair of pants, and two shirts, and no shoes, no more shoes. So anyway, and you could bring two cigars. You could get two cigars and buy two cigars. So you know, at that time in Cuba, when you left Cuba, you had to leave literally without 1 cent.
Right,
so,
I remember that.
Correct. So when I am there, you know, the costumes, you know, they look to make sure that you had only two underwear
right.
and two, you know, and then the guy sees that I have two cigars, and he said he took one of my cigars, and I said, listen, I have it. He said, yeah, too bad, and he took it, and what I was going to say, no, so he took one of my cigars. And I said, well, whatever, you know.
If I could add something to that very quickly, what I said, this is what we all went through, because they would
mm-hmm.
try to. They were really what they were trying to do is pick a fight with you so they can get you out of the plane.
No, and the guy probably smoked cigars and said, I'm gonna go on these cigars.
Right? Yeah,
know?
They were just bothering. Yeah, they were just.
Right. And what he's going to say, no, you know, he's going to take
right.
it, otherwise, yeah, I won't let him go, period.
That's
you know,
right. I mean, that was the problem.
Yeah.
There was
those
kinds of things used to happen all the time. They were trying to intimidate us and scare us. And I mean, that's what happens when there's no due process in a country, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
So,
anyway,
you left Cuba and you're on your way to Mexico now, I take it, right?
Yeah. So, well, I am. Imagine the police is looking for me, right? Now, I don't know. Thank God at that time there were no computers, and of
right.
course we are in a third world. I mean, third world, you know, communist country. This organization is completely,
right.
you know. Thank God for that. Okay,
right.
I have to give them credit.
Right. That's right.
That this organization, you know, they didn't know that I was leaving, you see? And so I was able to leave. But hello? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
No, we're here.
Yeah. No, because I heard something in my phone.
We're having a lot of fun with our lines today, but we're fine now.
And so I, you know, imagine the tension that I had. So
oh,
I get
sure.
into the plane, I get into the plane, and in the airport in Cuba, there was like a place that you could go out, like in the second story of the building, there was like a porch, a big porch, and people could go out there and see the planes, you know, whatever.
Right.
And my dad, there were only three persons, my dad and my two friends. My dad had was dressed in a suit, in a blue suit, was not too light and not too dark, you know, was in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he, at the time, everybody had a handkerchief in the jacket, you know,
right.
on the pocket of the jacket, you know, pocket of the jacket's pocket. And he pulled out the handkerchief, and he started waving the handkerchief so I could see him. You see, that was and now nobody does that, but at that time, people will take their handkerchief. If they wanted to wave, they will take their handkerchief up and wave so people far away will be able to see the handkerchief. Anyway, and that was the last image that I saw of my dad.
Did he pass away in Cuba, or?
Yes, he passed away in Cuba.
How many years after?
This was 1966 when he passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
And he passed away, everybody talks about, Cuba is a great, you know, the health care in Cuba. Well,
right.
The health care in Cuba, he had a, how do you call the, what is it, that you need, I forgot now the name of, an ulcer. He had
right.
an ulcer. The ulcer broke, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they had to run to the hospital, take him to the
right.
hospital. And instead, you know what they did? They put an enema. And instead of the ulcer, you know, treating the other, they put it in there, they
right.
kill him. So they had
wow.
no idea what the hell they were doing or
yeah.
whatever. Anyway, so...
Oh, that's
anyway,
terrible. So you never got to see
yeah.
your father again. You left Cuba as a young man. I mean, you
yeah.
were a young man at the time.
Right.
How old were you, if I may ask you, in 64?
I was 22.
That's what I mean. So you were a very young man,
yeah. 20,
and you never
22.
Got to see your father again. Now, what about your mother? Was your mother in Cuba also?
No, my mom died when I was 15 years old. 3 days
oh, okay,
before
so.
I became 16.
So your father was the only family you had, or immediate family that
correct.
You had. It, and
correct.
Unfortunately, and do you know, if I may ask you about this, because do you know where your father was buried in Cuba?
Well, yeah, he's buried with my mom. In the cemetery, you know, the Colón Cemetery.
In Colón Cemetery,
like the,
okay.
Yeah,
right, the major
like
cemetery.
The main cemetery, yeah.
Right, and have you,
it's
but you've never been back, you've never been back
never.
To,
never.
Yeah, so, because I have the same,
right.
I have the same issue with my, both of my grandfathers died in Cuba, right. and I've never been able to go to their graves. So that's another painful thing. So
right.
you're in Mexico now, and you come to the United States,
well,
and...
No, when,
yeah,
well, when
ahead.
I am in Mexico, imagine, I walk in, you know, I get off the plane. Oh, in the, you know, there is a moment of no return in the plane, okay?
Right.
And they cannot go back to Cuba because the you know, the gas, they don't have enough,
right.
You know, gas to go back. Anyway, when... I knew the point of no return, and I was looking and looking, you know, making sure that. And when I saw the point of, I had a Russian watch, which they were terrible, and I was watching the, you know, and when I already knew the time, which was the that. At that moment, I start yelling in the plane. I knew that they could not go back. So,
wow.
And I said, you know, freedom, freedom, I'm free. You know, and I started saying, you know, in Spanish. But anyway, I got to Mexico, and I get off, and I start walking on the, you know, with my little suitcase, and I was dressed in a suit, and I'm walking, you know, a suit that was already or an old style, because imagine, you know, 5 years
right.
everybody was anyway. I am walking, and I am seeing all these amazing, beautiful women walking, you know. And I said, oh, my goodness, but this is beautiful. These women. And I just, then I realized what happened, that in Cuba, for the last 5 years, there was no makeup.
Right.
So women, they were with no makeup in Cuba. The only women I saw was with no makeup, period. Now imagine, I go to Mexico, and,
right.
You know, they were from all over the world, you know, walking on the airport, you know, people
right.
from all types of all places everywhere, you know. And I am like, of course, they all had makeup.
Right. You know, the same thing, Orestes, if I may just jump, because we have a similar
yeah.
story. I was a little younger, but nevertheless, we both went to Mexico. And the thing that struck me when I went to Mexico, and I know it struck my parents also, was when we were in Mexico City and we were, like, there for a couple of days, and we would see the stores, you know, with the shops, you know, and you would see, as you're saying, the elegance of the women, and you know, like when you would walk down the sidewalk and you would see the mannequins, you know, on the store
yeah.
and all of that, and you would see people, and you're right. I mean, we had been disconnected from that for a couple of years because of all the shortages and so on. And even though I was probably a little bit, I was 12 when I left, so I guess that would be 10 years younger, but obviously I wasn't looking at women like you were when you were 22, but nevertheless, I know exactly what you're talking
you're
about. There were so many,
yeah,
so many things
were,
about Mexico. Yeah, I mean,
you
I
was blind.
Just,
yeah.
you but I mean, that's right, that's right. But I'm just saying that I can understand why all of a sudden you're 22 years old and you're seeing this, you know, this almost like you came out of a previous century or something into
right.
the future,
exactly.
And it's fascinating. Fascinating. I know exactly what you're talking about because I remember
yeah,
my parents talking about the shops, you know, and the
yeah,
light.
They
I mean,
probably
the
were
light.
Amazing. Oh my goodness! Look at this. What
yeah.
we had, and now we don't have any more.
Exactly,
too,
and that's
that
exactly what my parents would say. I mean, we went to,
right.
for example, we went to a Sears. There was a Sears in Roebuck, in Mexico
right.
City.
Right.
I remember, and my mother
right.
was like, you know, just looking at everything, saying, "Oh my God, you know, look at these dresses and." I remember they were like radios and TVs, and they were just like overwhelmed, you know,
right.
saying, we used to have this in Cuba, we don't anymore.
Right.
So anyway, back to your story.
Yeah. So anyway, I get there, so I'm walking. I don't have one single penny
right.
in my pocket, and I don't know anyone, okay? So I'm walking, I'm thinking, well, I guess I'm going to sleep here. I had no idea what I was going to do. The only thing I had was a cigar, okay? And I said, I'm going to try to sell this cigar to have some money. But suddenly I see a phone that one of those places where, you know, you go there to rent a car or do whatever. You know, I forgot exactly what that little store was, but I saw a phone in that little store. And I went there and I said to the person, excuse me, can I make a phone call? I said, no, you cannot make a phone call here from here. You have to go to a payphone. I said, well, I just came from Cuba and I don't have a dime. And I need to make a phone call to someone, you know, to pick me up. And I was lying. I had no, you know, there was nobody. I didn't know anybody. But I said, this guy might give me the money to go to the phone, and at least I'll have, like, I don't know, 10 cents or whatever. So he gave me 80 Mexican cents at the time, which was about three. That was what it cost to make three calls.
But that would have been that would have been 10 American cents because eight pesos was $1. So 80 cents would have been
12 to 50,
right? Yeah,
was 12.50 was
the exchange rate, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Exchange rate, right? So he gave me 80 cents. But anyway, so I thank you very much. Then I start walking, keep on, and then so this lady, this, you know, she was, I don't know, 27, 28, was a little older than me. She comes to me, and and says, "Are you Cuban?" Of course, she saw me by the way I was dressed.
Right.
Although I had a suit, and you know, and my eyes probably, you know, all open, looking like an idiot, you know, everywhere.
Right.
She said, "Are you?" I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, I come every day here to help Cubans, you know, when they come." And I said, "Do you have any?" Well, I said, "Listen, I don't know where I'm going to sleep. I have no place. I don't know anyone. I'm nothing." So she gave me 10 Mexican pesos, which was about 80 cents. Okay.
Right.
So now, you know, I'm talking to her, and I'll tell her the story. And suddenly another guy comes to us and says, "Are you so-and-so?" I said, "No, but I am Orestes Matachena," and I tell him the story that I didn't have anybody. You know, I'm like with a violin, you know,
right.
You know, telling my story to see what the hell I'm, you know, I'm trying to get, you know, to see how I was going to survive, you know. But, so he said, "Well, I came to pick up this couple, and I thought you guys were the couple. What I'm going to do then is you can come with me, I have a hotel." I said, "Listen, I don't think you understand what I'm talking about. I don't have a dime to pay you." He said, "Don't worry about it. You know, there are many. You know, I'm not going to be richer or poorer. You can come. And you can stay there until you leave," because I told, you know, and I said, "Okay, fine." So I went, and when we get there to his, he said to the bellboy, "Take him to the penthouse." When he said that, my heart stopped. Because I said, "Oh my goodness, this guy is homosexual, and who knows what's going to happen here? Oh my
goodness,
I have to deal with this now."
Right,
but
right.
But I said, "Well, let's keep on moving. You know, I got to do. You know, let's see what happens. So, you know, let's keep on. You know, keep on moving forward." So,
right.
The bellboy takes me to the and what they called the you know, it was where they put all the old stuff, breaking furniture, you know, broken furniture, you know, everything. It was on the roof of the hotel, and that's
right.
What they called the penthouse. They didn't have a penthouse; they just called that the penthouse there. So you know, my heart, you know, stopped beating again. So then I have nothing against the homosexuals, okay?
I know.
I have very good friends, you know, and I've been in the theater and
no,
the
I understand, but
you know,
I mean,
so, but you know, I am not one, and I, you know, at that moment, imagine if you're not. I mean, anyway, whatever. You
right, that's
what
not
I'm
what you were looking for at that time.
That's the only thing I need now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's all you need right now is that experience. I know exactly.
Yeah.
But
so,
but you had, you know, so now you're, but you're
never,
still in Mexico,
never
right?
Never a dull moment.
That's right. Well, that's it. But here's the amazing thing, Orestes, and we're gonna go another 10 minutes or so if you can give us that
okay.
much time. I apologize
yeah.
for the
okay.
delay at the top, but we just had a technical problem.
Yeah.
But I like to take your story to the United States next. But here's the thing that I find fascinating. Well, I'm sitting here fascinated with your story because I'm familiar. This is the only story. I'm sure there are others. I just had not heard them before, of a person leaving by himself. Most of the time, most of the people I know left Cuba with their mom and dad. Or they left
right.
Cuba with her brother or sister, you know, the Pedro Pons or whatever.
Right.
But your
right.
story is so unique because you're literally by yourself in Mexico City without a dime, you know, basically rolling the dice. I mean, for all you know, that man that you ran into could have had bad intentions. I'm not talking about homosexuality, but other bad intentions. And
right.
you were like rolling the dice at every single step. Now, we didn't
right.
exactly have a lot of money either when we left, but at least I was 12, and I had the protection of my parents, you know what I mean?
Right,
so,
right.
So, but you were all by yourself. I think that's fascinating. So
yeah,
if we could do this, if we could take, if you could, over the next 10 minutes or so, if you could take the story into the United States, and then we'll close it.
Absolutely, I will. So, but I want to tell you a few little things here that happened during the, you know, and I started, you know, I get there, they put a bed, you know, I got one of the beds, they were there, I put it there in the corner, the whole thing, and, you know, everything fine, you know, all the furniture, you know, I was sleeping under the furniture, where all the broken furniture or whatever they had there, you know, I lived there. The only beautiful thing was that one of the walls was all a glass window, which I could see the entire Mexico. I had one of the best views in Mexico, okay? And anyway, when I come downstairs, another guy was there, a Cuban guy that was staying there, said, "Hey, you want to go to a bodega. Would you like to come to a bodega with me?" I said, yeah, I would love to come with you. So I go with him, and I walked into the bodega, and when I start walking, for all of us, you walk into a supermarket, a bodega, you know, it's like, you walk in and that's it. When I walked, imagine all these shelves were from the top from the floor all the way to the top, and aisles full of all kinds of goods, and all kinds of colors, okay, red, blues, yellows, you know, I mean, like all the bags, the pots, everything that you know that they were selling. And as I start walking, it's like, imagine I start walking like in slow motion. Because I start seeing all these things, and I start getting dizzy, and I am about to fall down, you know, and I start falling down, and the guy was with me, you know, the two fellows had to grab me and hold me, otherwise I would have fallen. And he said, "What happened?" And I said, "I got dizzy seeing all these colors and all these things." It was amazing. So anyway, I stayed there for 3 months. And about 15 days after I was there, I am sleeping, and suddenly I feel something in that is. This moving in my body, you know. And I said, "What? Are you there? Hello?"
"Yeah, I'm here. We're here."
"Oh, okay."
We're intensely we're intentionally listening to you. That's
okay. Oh, okay. So I feel something, you know. And I said, "What's good?" You know. My heart stopped again, okay? And now I am back, you know, I'm facing, my body's facing the wall because the bed was, you know, to the wall, you know, next to the wall, and I am facing the wall, my head, my eye, you know, my face is facing the wall. But I feel something, you know, like moving, like pulling my T-shirt off, you know, okay? And I said, "Oh, my goodness," you know, I didn't open my eyes or anything. This took like, I don't know how many seconds, okay? I don't know what to do, and suddenly I said, "Help," and I just I don't know. I just jumped out of bed and I started beating this shadow, okay? And the shadow just runs out of this room that I was in. Now the room, see, the room that I lived there, you know, that place where I lived was had a red door, was a steel wall, I mean door, but it did not have a lock. There was no lock. It was like a you know, when you put the lock, was an empty. It was like a hole there. There was no lock. You just could walk in and out. So he runs, you know, imagine I am like panting, you know, I'm saying, oh, what do I have? You know, and I take the bed and I put it, in front of the I close the door, put the bed in front of the door, and, you know, and I sit there, and I am panting and panting. So, you know, for 5 minutes later, I lay down again, I fall asleep. And the next day I walk in and I go to, you know, when I go downstairs, I said to the guy that took me to the bodega, I said, listen, this is what happened to me. And I found a key on the floor, you know, and I think one key. You know, the old keys, you know, those old keys.
Right.
And I found that key, and I said, look, this key, you know, this somebody walk in and start to, you know, and I explained the whole thing to him. He said, this is a disgrace, and this is ridiculous, and this is crazy. Oh, I know, this is the guy that lives in such and such a number, because, he had a number, the key had the number. He said, oh, that's a gay guy, and the And I said, please don't say anything. I'm going to tell the owner, you know. I said, please don't. I don't want any. I don't want to start here a problem here. Don't worry about it. Nothing happened. So no. He goes and tells the owner. The owner comes to me and says, Orestes, this is, you know. And I said, well, yeah, but don't worry. I don't care. It's fine. Everything is fine. Don't worry about it. And the guy takes this fellow, he just throws him out of the tells him that he has to leave the hotel. And anyway, about 2 weeks later, I am having lunch there, and suddenly this guy comes with two women, beautiful, gorgeous women. They come, he walks in and sits with the at the table where the owner was sitting, and they talk, you know, and then they leave, and the owner, you know, I wanted to get under the table, and when I saw that guy there, I wanted to get under the table, and then the owner gets up and start walking towards my table, and I wanted to run. I said, oh my goodness, I don't want even to know what's going to happen.
Right, right, right.
So he walks to me and says, did you see who came here? I said, yes. He said, did you see the two women he was with him? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, he came to ask for, to apologize to me and to you. And he brought these two women for you to have to make love. I said, wait, so what happened? He said, well, I told them to get the hell out of here.
Right,
and
right.
Then, and I said, well, you shouldn't be in that, I accepted the apology. So
sure.
Anyway.
Well, Orestes, we're just about out. I hate to do this, but we're just about out of time. But so then you came to the United States about 3 years.
I came to the United States, and when I come down the airplane, I get off. The first thing I see is the American flag, and that was the weirdest thing that it has stayed always with me. That I could not believe, you know, the flag waving, American flag waving, and you know, it was like if I was in another world, right? And the flag waving and stuff, and I went to the Cuban thing where they gave you some clothes, whatever you needed, and a friend of mine or my family friend that lives in Pattersville. 3 days later, I went to his home in Titusville, Florida. Paul Estrada, his name is, and he's 96 years old now. Anyway, I go there and he says I said, well, I need a job and stuff. He said, okay, so there is an opening for a dishwasher. Opening at the ranch house. So I go there, you know, dressed in a suit. To get a dishwasher. You know, the manager said, no, there's no job. I said, no, I just won the job. Broken English, and my friend, you know, helped me with English. I barely spoke English. He said, no, he just came for the dishwasher. So I became the dishwasher. You know, he gave me the job, and I worked 9 hours a day. 9 hours a day, 6 days a week. And you know how much I made?
It must have been very six. Was it 69 cents an hour? I think.
$30 a week.
Yeah, because my father was working as a bellboy at that time at a hotel, and he basically made it on tips. But here's what we're going to do, Orestes. Let's wrap it up now. But I want to tell you from a friend, as a friend of mine, that your story is absolutely wonderful, and it's just one more story. And you know, I have this feeling that 100 years from now, all these people are going to look back at all these stories. And just be amazed at what we all went through, because each one of us has our own story, and it's just
absolutely.
Yours is obviously fascinating. And I do apologize about the first few minutes at the top, but we went the whole time here, and I gave you extra time, and I just want to thank you, and most of all, congratulate you on your success and your career. And I'm sure that, you know, 50 years, you know, when you sit there and you think about it, 50 years ago, it just seems hard to believe that we would all be talking about it 50 years later. 50 years is such a long time. So I want to congratulate you for being my friend and for telling us the story and for the great person you are. I know I speak on behalf of lots of people who respect you and value you a great deal. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And congratulations on your great success in the movies and everything. And and guess what? I mean, did you notice something today about our interview?
I don't. No, I have no idea.
Matachena. 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 Matachena.
You didn't forget.
No, I know. I said so. I beat it into my brain here so that I would not say anything but matachena, matachena, matachena.
That's right.
All right. So, and I have to say something. My friend, he may be listening later, but my friend Jorge Ponce, you remember Jorge?
He was with us one night.
Well, Jorge sent me an email before the show saying, make sure you say matachena. And I said, Jorge, I have it written down in front of me. I'll never in my life again make that mistake. So it's matachena, matachena, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Vote today. Go and vote.
That's right. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Well, thank you so much, Orestes. It's a great honor and a great pleasure. Thank you very much. Orestes Matachena, our good friend. Great Cuban story there for you. Another one of the many, many stories. And that's why we wanted to do this. I love talking to Cubans and how they left and how they came to the United States. Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for your time, and we'll chat with you later. Thank you so much, Orestes Matachena. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and yes, don't forget to vote.